0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. On this day, I'm sure you're all calming down after that very exciting, disappointing finish to that, or a disappointing result, you should say, in that match. But by God, they did do us proud on their first outing. We'll leave that there for a minute because I want to go to Vanessa now. Vanessa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm very well, Vanessa.
Good.
You got in touch, Vanessa, because you have a bugbear about degrees and the demand that you now must have a degree.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Tell us your own situation.
Well, my background is HR, which I've done for almost 30 years. And there was a role advertised, which I thought I'd be suitable for, given obviously HR is dealing with people. However, a prerequisite was a degree, which I challenged, and I didn't get a response, but was told my application would be put forward, and then I got a letter, not even signed, about a week later, saying I was not successful.
And when you started out in HR, Vanessa, what were the, like, what, how did you get into it? As in, was there any education requirements that time?
No, I mean, it was by default as opposed to design. I'd worked for somebody and she rang me out of the blue one day and she said, look, I'm looking for a recruitment officer. What do you think? And I said, yeah, sure. And I sort of started off then and worked my way up to a senior position. And that was in the UK, which I was in for almost 20 years. And I came back to Ireland and I had a number of roles. Unfortunately, two of them I was made redundant. But I notice these days most every job, even within my field, you know, again, they demand you have a degree or professional qualification.
And you're beyond the stage now, are you, that you would think of going back to college?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, fair dues to people who have degrees, but at the end of the day, HR, an awful lot of it is common sense. You need to be able to read people. You need to understand emotions, you need to know when to push, when to pull, that sort of thing. And you only learn that through experience.
So your sense is that that experience you have, as you say, is this 30 years of experience that mm-hmm. you have picked up along the way now. You're yeah. saying that that is set to naught, basically, because to get off the starting blocks now to be considered for
yeah,
positions.
More or less, yeah.
So if I come out of college with my degree, but with maybe, you know, very little life experience, I'm ahead of you already.
Oh, yeah. 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 I don't get a get out of jail card. I'm stuck.
And, like, have you struggled then to get work in recent times?
Oh, I have. Yeah. I mean, fortunately, I've picked up a contract with somebody I've worked with before. I suppose I'm lucky in a way that a lot of my work comes through referral. And that's consultancy work, but it can be, you know, just a one-off. It might take a couple of hours. This particular one is for longer than that, but there's no sort of consistency to it.
Mm-hmm. But what you'd really like is full-time pension.
Well, I would, but I just think it's a terrible shame that employers are missing out on people who have life experience, I guess, and, you know, they're not even considered.
Is that the case? I would have thought, though, that employers, particularly when they're looking for staff for their HR division and to, mm-hmm. you know, to do that job that needs, as you say, you need to have some read of people and some sense of how people will respond to various situations.
Yeah.
I would have thought that right up there would be somebody with life experience. I would have thought that would be one of the criteria that would be put you ahead of the queue.
I would have thought so, but seemingly not. I mean, I get quite despondent at times because I apply and I apply and apply. You either get no response or you get a rejection.
Do you think, I'm just going to throw that out there now, this out there now, is mm-hmm. it an age thing as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Do you mind me asking what age bracket? I won't ask your age, Vanessa. But
I'm in my 60s.
Right. OK, so obviously you have to be around that age to have the amount of experience you have.
Mm.
But do you think that other, and obviously you're dealing with HR departments when you're putting in your applications. Do you think they see that and think, maybe not for us?
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, a lot of companies these days have, you know, diversity policies, all bells and whistles. But when you dig beneath the surface, they don't actually promote diversity, I don't think. There was one very well-known company, household name, I applied for through, somebody I knew who was a recruitment consultant. And they said, oh, yeah, you'd be fantastic for this role because of your experience, blah, blah, blah. And within 2 days, they came back and said, no, they've decided not to progress your application. I knew it was because of my age.
Well, I suppose you're guessing it's because of your age.
Well, I'm guessing, yeah. But how have I gone from, you know, you'd be brilliant in this job to, no, they don't want to progress your application. So, I mean, I have to draw that conclusion.
You see, I think because we hear, and we're constantly hearing, we're in full employment, that, you know, there's jobs for everyone who wants them. It must, in that environment, in that context, it must be soul-destroying to be in the position you'll find yourself in, you know, putting in applications and getting no response.
Yeah, I mean, and what's really ironic, I guess, for me, is the fact that they're looking to extend the retirement age. Okay, fair enough. Which is okay if you're in a job, but if you're not, you think, gosh, here I am, sort of wasting away here, and they want people to work longer.
And over the years, has HR changed an awful lot, Vanessa, over the time you've been?
Absolutely, phenomenally. Certainly, from the time I started in HR, there's much greater protection for the employees, which is great. There's so many rules and regulations now, you have to keep on top of it, which I do. But I think certainly within most places, you know, there is a very high regard for its people, because any organisation is only as good as its people. It doesn't matter what tools you can bring in or technology, but it's the people behind us that drive it.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the biggest lesson you've learned dealing with people over the years?
I guess, I've been in some grim situations. I guess for me, I think I'm a good read of people. Mm-hmm. In terms of how to deal with them in any given situation. I mean, I think I've dealt with most anything now. And that generally gives me a steer as to how to deal with it, if you know what I mean.
What would you say would be, and without naming any names or any company names particularly, like what would be the hairiest scenario you would find yourself in?
I was held hostage in a post room.
Good Lord.
By an employee. Yeah.
Okay, that was not what I was expecting you to say, Vanessa, I have to say.
No names, obviously, but it was only a young chap, lovely chap, but unfortunately he fell in with the wrong people, got into drugs, came in one morning high as a kite. So I was called to come down and try and calm him down. It took three security guards to hold him down, practically. But just by talking to him, I sat with him there for a few hours and eventually managed to get him into an ambulance, but it's just a terrible shame, a young lad like that, and he'd just gone loopy on drugs. That was probably the hairiest, but you just have to go in and try and sort it out.
sorry, I'm a bit blown away by that, I have to say. That was a hairy situation, but you sound as cool as a breeze. Like, even when that was happening, were you that cool?
Well, I was, in as much as I'd actually interviewed him, and he, poor little thing, like, he was only in his early 20s, and he had a slight physical impairment, but he was such a nice, nice kid, and then within, I think he'd been about there a year, so I knew him, and he used to bring the post round, so I'd be able to say hello to him, and how are you, and that sort of stuff, so I could have been mad, I don't know. I didn't know how he reacted, but based on his previous behaviour, let's say, I thought, oh, here, let's do it.
Okay. I'm thinking now, if I had a HR division myself, I'd want you you in it, Vanessa, if you can deal with that level of drama. And but as you say, it's that, no, you know, even somebody, you, that what you've been through there and all the years and all everything you pick up, particularly, as you say, in the HR end of things, you just don't see that valued now.
Not at all. No, it's very much, I find I'm not, I don't do fluffy. I've never done fluffy, but I find now that a lot of it is fluffy, but when you scratch the surface, there's not much substance underneath it, which to me, again, is, it's unfair to the people that you're trying to drag into, let's say, a practice or a way of doing things, or that looks, on paper, looks fine, but you scratch the surface and it's just not fit for purpose.
Right. Okay, thanks for that, Vanessa. I want to bring in Joanne now because... Can you hear us there, Joanne?
Okay. I'm right there for you, sorry. You'll have to do it online yourself.
Yeah. I don't think we can go to Joanne yet, can we? Do you know, we'll take a break and just sort out Joanne's line. Bear with us.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I have to say, I know it sounds like I knew what was coming there when I was asking Vanessa what was the hairy situation she was ever in, but I'm still reeling from the idea that you had been caught in that situation, Vanessa. We're still trying to get Joanne on the line there because I know our starting point with you, Vanessa, was the fact that you feel that without a degree, because you can say, I have that degree in my back pocket, that... That you, nobody wants to know you, basically, that you, employers
well,
are saying, you know, are overlooking
sort of
everything else you have to bring to the party.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have, am I going to Linda now?
Hi there. How are you?
Yes. Sorry. Bear with me, Vanessa. I want to bring in Linda, if I may, because we were talking about education and how important some employers are making that. But Linda, tell your issue is your daughters.
Yeah. So Aoife is going into third year nursing in Letterkenny, and Maeve, hopefully leaving cert results are okay. Will be wants to go to Waterford to do nursing. Now I'm a nurse myself for over 30 years, so the girls are following my footsteps. The only thing is, because I'm a nurse, I'm seen as a high earner, so therefore the girls get very little. Susie, now Aoife gets her fees paid for and she gets 25 euros a week to live on. Maeve has only had received half her fees and doesn't get any maintenance grant. So it's not encouraging the girls to go. Now, I don't know how, if I can't afford it, if something doesn't change, I'm going to have to say to Maeve that she can't go to college, she can't do nursing, because I'm not going to be able to afford three lots of rent, you know.
And why have you got it for Aoife, not for Maeve?
Because Maeve has a summer job. She's had a summer job since she was 16. And her earnings was attached to my earnings. So which brought, because the girls are relying on me as a single parent, my earnings were my earnings exceeded the means because May's earnings was attached to mine from her summer job.
Oh, so it's the summer job that is putting her over the line.
Over the line, absolutely. And plus the fact, like last year I appealed Susie for Aoife for 25 euros a week. I had to reduce my hours for personal reasons. Mm-hmm. And she still only got the 25 euros a week. Now, you could say every student has a job, but student nurses work 12-hour shifts for nothing. They don't get a salary. So if Aoife was to have a job up in Letterkenny, she'd be doing her 12-hour shifts on the ward when she goes back on placement. So she'd have. I couldn't, you know, I don't want her working every hour God sends as well and having no quality of life, you know.
I know, but I mean, is it really at the point where she won't be able to do this now?
Aoife will continue. Aoife's going into third year. But if I don't get if I don't get any contribution towards Maeve, there is no way. I'm paying my rent. I'm paying Aoife's rent 520 a month. Maeve's rent is going to be 420 a month. I work every single weekend. I can't remember the last time I had a weekend off. because I work every single Sunday to get the double time. And that's put up my wages again, you see. But there's no loophole there. They don't see that, you know. And like, I know they have policies and they have I's, the dots and T's across, and I completely understand that. Mm-hmm. But surely there should be something there in special circumstances. Like, my girls want to do nursing. We need nurses. This should be, you know, they should be rewarded for wanting to do nursing, you know.
And I, as you say, though, Linda, it's a very particular situation as well, as you say, because nursing involves a lot of actual, like, training to be a nurse involves a lot of actual work. There are other college courses where you would have a lot more downtime, perhaps, where you could earn a few bob to supplement your grant. Whereas for nursing, as you say, there isn't a lot of downtime.
No, because they do their 12-hour shifts on the wards, and then, you know, they have their 3 or 4 days off then, and then usually they have assignments, like from Aoife, like, she has assignments hand in all the time, Letterkenny. So she uses her downtime to study. I don't want her working 3 or 4 days a week. You know, I want her to enjoy this time, enjoy the experience, you know. But now Aoife is actually talking about when she actually qualifies to leave in the country. She's that downhearted over it.
And that would be heartbreaking for you.
Oh, it absolutely would. But, you know, it would be heartbreaking for Ireland, because I'd see in Limerick they're building on extension after extension. They've got no one to nurse it. They've no staff. You know, we should be encouraging our young women, our young men, to continue on doing nursing. You know, like, I love my girls following my footsteps. I'm so proud. I love my job. I've been at it so long. But I don't want to discourage me because I can't afford it.
And I know, I see you've sent us in the correspondence you've had with the department appeal this. But, I mean, their line is basically, you know, they just talk you through what you know is the case, is that if a student has earnings, it's added to the total household income when they're calculating eligibility for a SUSE grant. It says that a student can earn up to €4,500 in holiday earnings outside of term time, which won't be taken into account. And they're saying that that figure is actually going to be increased in the year coming up to 6,500. But that's because Maeve has been working.
Because she had her little summer job.
Yeah.
And she's going to, you know, she's saying now that, Mammy, I'll have to get two jobs if I want to go to Waterford, you know. And I could say to the girls, stay in Limerick beside me. But I want them to spread their wings. I want them to get a taste of life, you know. Like, it'd be very easy for the both girls to go nursing in Limerick and to be here with me all the time. But I don't want that for them. I want them to experience life. And they're not been encouraged to experience life. Now, I've been very lucky. I've got a local TD here in Limerick is going to hopefully see can he do anything to increase the grant for both girls, you know. But if that doesn't come through, I really, really don't know what I'm going to do.
Can TDs do that now? Is that part of the deal with TDs?
Through data protection, you have to allow them to access. They have to be sanctioned to have access to your notes, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you know what? I'm kind of clutching at straws, you know. I'm trying to do everything, really, and contact everybody, anyone that can help me, you know.
I know, because you just don't want to turn around to one of your daughters and say she can't do what her sister is doing.
Her confidence would be absolutely shot. And she put so much work into leaving her to get these points. Oh, it doesn't even bear thinking about. Well, you know, I'm not even thinking about it until we get to August, and then I'll start worrying about it then.
Yeah, I know. I've got Joanne back on, and she's talking about a very related issue. Thank you for that, Linda, and very, very best of luck to you. If you want to hang on there, you might want to chip in here as well.
Thank you.
But Joanne, have we got you now?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Joanne. You again, when we started off today with Vanessa, who was saying she couldn't get an interview for a job because she didn't have a degree. You want to get a degree, but you're running up against the SUSE grant issue.
I'm running up every obstacle, yes.
Okay. Talk us through your situation. So you have been working as an SNA.
I'm working as an SNA for the last 10 years, and I've always wanted to qualify as a primary school teacher, but I hadn't got the opportunity when I was younger. So I'm 45 now. I made the decision about 7 years ago to go back. I needed higher level Irish because I didn't get those marks in my Leaving Cert. So I started in a Gael school to basically improve my Irish. I'm now fluent, and went back, did my Leaving Cert Irish, reset my maths as well, just to refresh things.
Wow.
And basically, it's a big, long... I have three dependent children. We're in the bracket of my... I'm working, my husband's working, I'd be giving up my job to go back to full-time education 4 years. I was dependent on the Susie grant, but I was still going to struggle. And basically, the college fees, they're just steadily increasing, and they're outpacing the inflation and the wage growth, and the grant should reflect this. The existing thresholds with Susie are just unrealistic. I was told that I qualified for €500, which basically wouldn't cover my books. I went back to Susie and said, are you taking my salary into account in this? Because I did my math and I worked out that I should at least get 50% of the fees. And they came back and said, yes, we work it on last year's revenue, even though I'm not going to have those funds in September. And I said, well, surely I'm going to be handing in my notice. I can send my P45 at that stage. Can you not tell me this is what you're going to receive in September based on you giving up your job? No, we'll assess that in September. So I basically have to make that decision now with three dependent children to give up a full-time position and hope for the best, hope that I'm not over the threshold. They also told me at the same time, which I had plans to work all the way through part-time, because there's no feasible way of me doing this without being able to work. And my school said they'll take me in any days as a sub whenever they can. Mm-hmm. And they told me you're allowed a certain amount of weeks. I think it's 1 week at Easter, 2 weeks in the summer that you're allowed to work. And anything else will put me over the threshold then for the following year. So I'm at the position now after going through all of that time. And I'm going to have to... I got my place and I'm going to have to turn it down.
Oh, Joanne.
Because I just...
Joanne, can I say something? St. Vincent de Paul helped me out last year with Aoife's books and a laptop and stuff like that. You could contact your local St. Vincent de Paul and maybe ask for help towards books and your laptop and any other bits and pieces you may need.
I know. And listen, I know there is lots of help out there. It's basically the fees. It's 5,500 and trying to live from day to day, which I was willing to do. I was willing to work to be able to help me do that. But I'm in a position now where I'm forced. I can't even do that.
But Joanne,
I can't help myself. And I'm not, my husband has a good job. This is why I'm saying the existing thresholds are unrealistic. We're in this middle squeeze category where working class people, but just the cost of living now with mortgages and everything else gone up, it's just unrealistic. There's just no way. There's no way around it.
I just feel so much for you, Joanne, because all the work you've already put in for this to get to where you want to go, like going back to school, becoming fluent in Irish, sitting the Leaving Cert in Irish, the maths. And
the ironic thing is, this year in the school, we had such a lack of teachers applied for, especially in a Gael school. It's so hard to get the teachers with the language. We had to take a certain amount of SNAs out of their position and into a resource teaching role because we couldn't get the teachers. So that's the thing. I'm done my travelling now. I'm 45 years of age. Whatever skills and qualifications I get now, I'm putting back into this country. And it's literally, there's like pillars and posts at every road I try to go down. There's literally some sort of obstacle to stop me. Like, every individual in this country should have the opportunity to enhance their skills and qualifications to their fullest potential. And if that is not the case in Ireland.
What age are your kids now, Joanne?
I have one under 10, a teenager, and I have a lad that's going into 6th year. So I'm going to have him. I should be 2nd year in college when he's looking into going on to the college scale as well. So I have that. I can't even think that far down the road.
Yeah, that's another stress, another Susie application down
exactly,
the road.
Exactly.
I don't know what to say to you. Have you explored all possibilities?
I have. There was another scholarship with university. I was hoping that it's by a private donor, and 50 scholarships are awarded each year, and I think it was for 7,000 for other people that don't know about it, maybe for next year. And I was hoping maybe to qualify, or I think it's kind of a look at the draw sort of thing, and I didn't get that. So I'm like, will I sell my car? But I have to be realistic. I'm not 18. I can't say, do you know what, I'll make that jump and we'll see what happens in a year's time. I have 3 independent children. I can't do that. I have to know that we'll be okay. And at the moment, I can't say that. So I after doing all of that work, the day that letter came in and to say that I had got a place on the course, start in September, was the proudest.
There should be something there.
I have to say no, I'm very sorry. It's all I ever wanted to do, but I can't afford it.
Horrible.
Ah, Joanne, you haven't turned it down yet, have you? It's still there for you.
No, I have until August, but really, really, I'm saying to myself, what is the point? Because I'm only fooling myself now at this stage. I've explored every single avenue.
And is it the case that if they were able to tell you that based on your earnings, last year you're only entitled to this, what did you say, €500? But if they were able to say to you, look, don't worry about it. As soon as we get your P45 to show you're no longer working and no longer earning that salary, we can guarantee you X amount of grant. Would that be enough comfort for you to get over the line, or?
Well, it would be helpful, as in I know where I stand for September, but I still am going to have the issue of if they come back and say 50%, which is what I think I should qualify for. So hopefully if I got that 50%, I still have the other half of the fees to pay, and now there's an obstacle in my way where I thought I could work part-time to keep me going. I'm told now that I can't, because that will put me over for next year.
Yeah.
And there's no way I'd be able to pay the fees and not work at the same time. It's just...
That's it, yeah. And that's the Linda's. That's the problem Linda's having as well.
Yeah,
in their house,
it's like they're going out of their way to stop you from going. Like, the amount of tax I am paying on a bi-weekly basis is actually unbelievable. You're talking like €500. Give me back my tax fees and help the students along. And then when they get their full-time position, have a payment plan that they can pay back at that stage then. There has to be some sort of system that's not working against us when we're trying to better ourselves.
They're not going to change just for me or you. You know, realistically, they're not going to change. The loophole isn't going to change. I think it's just when the next election comes up, we need to stand up and be counted.
Yeah.
But you know,
they've increased the threshold this year. They said from 62,000 to 100,000, which sounds wonderful, but that actually qualifies you for €500.
Yeah,
which is, as I said, a gas bill. It's not an awful lot.
It is not. But as you say, it's not lost. The irony is not lost in any of us. I think that we're talking about potential nurses, potential teachers here, which are two areas we know we have a massive recruitment crisis in retaining and recruiting both nurses and teachers. And there you are, you know, there you are desperately trying to get on and do all the work. And this is what you're up against. I have somebody else on the line now I want to bring in. Regina, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. You were listening to Joanne and Linda there.
I was listening. No, I did miss the very start. But basically, from what I can gather, they're over the threshold to get a full Susie grant. Yeah. So, like, my point is, you know, it didn't come as a surprise to them that their children were wanting to go to college. Surely they'd have prepared for this down the road. And I just feel that this feeling that, you know, their education should be paid for, but as I know, I'm well aware they're taxpayers themselves, but that their children's education should be paid for by other taxpayers, it's a bit Irish, I think, to be honest. Like, I mean, they're your children, you pay for them. We all have to do this, you know? I mean, unless you're well below the threshold. And I just feel that, you know, you made a point there, Katie, that, you know, these are potential nurses and potential teachers that we have a shortage of. We have a shortage because they never bloody stay in the country, because as soon as they have their degree, they're off to Australia or Canada or whatever. So, I mean, it's of no benefit us paying for their degree.
Okay, well, just to stop you on your tracks on that one there now, because Joanne was making that exact point that she is a mother of three in her 40s, and she's all her travelling behind her, and she will definitely be bringing her skills to the economy here. But are you saying, Regina, that everybody should be in a position to save and put their children through college? When it's whatever, what was 5.5 grand a year for those fees? And then you start talking about, you know, if you have to put somebody up in accommodation and feed them and keep a roof over their head. Are you saying every family in Ireland should be able to do that themselves?
Well, if they're not, no, I'm not saying that. But I mean, if you're a professional and you're earning so much that you don't qualify for the grant, well, obviously, you can afford to pay to put your child through college.
Wow. Laura, I can't believe that woman is saying that. I'm a professional. I've been a single parent, four children. I have struggled. You can't take it. Everyone's situation is very, very different.
They are, but you're making the point, yours is unique, but like why should the rules change for you? You know, I as I said, it didn't come as a surprise to you that you had four children that were going to need this. You know, I mean, you have to cut your cloth according to your measure. If you're earning above the threshold and you can't get the grant, well, you know, why is that our fault? Why should we be paying for it?
Well, surely because I've paid my tax working as a nurse for the last 30 years, surely I'm entitled to that, am I not? I'm bringing individuals into the world that want to care for people like you, that when you're sick, you know, I think that's very commendable, you know.
Maybe, but I think it's your responsibility to pay for it.
Well,
Regina, I'm just wondering, at what point do you think we have to step in and help people? Because obviously not every family is going to be in a position to put their children through third level education and beyond now, because actually third level no longer seems to be enough for most things. At what stage do you think we should be stepping in? Because God, if we left it at that, sure, God, imagine the talent we would not have. Imagine the opportunities that would be lost to people.
But you see, there is a threshold at which we step in. There is a threshold, and these people are above the threshold.
Again, I just want to point out, and I know maybe you might have missed the start of Joanne there, but her situation is that she's being judged on income that she will not have from September. That's her issue, is that she's being judged on her income last year as an SNA, but she's not going to be able to hold on to that job or work that job because she's going to be in college.
She's going to be in college herself as well. And is that a grant or who's paying for that?
No, that's for her. This is what we're talking about. It's herself that's going back to college in Joanne's case.
I know. And who's paying for that?
Well, this is her. This
very bitter lady.
This is her point, is that she is...
I'm very practical. I mean, you know, I had three children. They're reared, thank God. But I paid for every single thing they did. I'm not bitter at all. But I think the fact that you're above the threshold, all right, you won't have the SNA income next year. I mean, that's a choice you're making. You're making that choice. You know, I mean, what do you want? You can't eat your cake and still have it.
Well, I'm above the threshold because my child, who was 16, she started working. Her earnings was attached to mine. So I should tell my 16-year-old, no, you don't work. So I don't go above the threshold.
Maybe, if that's what it takes. Yeah. if that's what it takes. You know, I mean, if it puts you over the threshold,
you don't actually work for Susie, do you? Because you sound like you do.
No, I don't.
I'm going to go now because that lady is really upsetting me. Thanks very much, Keith, for having me on the line. I can't listen to that lady anymore.
Okay, Linda. Okay, don't. Okay, Linda's gone from us there. Regina, can I just explore though? Where I mean, are you familiar with the thresholds? And do you accept? Because one of the points that Joanne was making was that the cost of the cost of going to college has increased exponentially in recent years in terms of, you know, fees and accommodation and all the things that go with it, but that the Susie grants have not kept up with that. So I'm just wondering if you're familiar with exactly where you might hit that threshold and how difficult it might be, particularly if you're a single parent and you have more than one child, to keep ahead of that.
Well, I'm a few years out from it, so I'm not au fait with what's currently in situ. But as I said, I mean, you know, when we had our children, we made sure that there was funding there for them to do whatever they needed to do. We didn't depend on anyone else, nor would we have assumed to depend on anyone else.
But listen to Linda there. She's working. She works every single Sunday so she can get double pay, so she can continue to get her keep her daughter in nursing school. She has worked as hard as you or anyone else, Regina. Some people, no matter how hard you work, you're not going to be in a position to put your children through third level. So I'm wondering what you say to those people. And the Susie grant isn't going to stretch, as we just saw there in Linda's case. So I'm saying, what do you say to those people? Do you say tough?
Well, I mean, the implication is that they can fund it, obviously, if they're not getting the grant. You know, that is the implication. If you don't qualify for the grant because you're over the threshold, the obvious reason for that is that it's assumed you can afford to pay what needs to be paid. You know, that's why there's a threshold there, Katie.
Again, I'm just going to say the argument that threshold is set too low.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, who set that? I don't know. But obviously, somebody with knowledge in that department has set it, and they feel that that's correct. Maybe it does need to be reviewed. I don't know. But at the moment, it's where it's at. And as I said, you know, I don't think, maybe if they introduce that, you know, payback into the system when you leave, if they introduce something like that, maybe the threshold could be lowered. But at the moment, I think, you know, that's the threshold. It doesn't come as a surprise to you that your four children are going to need A, B, C, and D. You have them. You have to provide for them. That would be my opinion.
Okay.
You brought them into the world. You have to provide for them, Katie. You can't expect other people to be funding your child's education so that they can head off, you know?
Okay.
And I know it's a caring profession for many of them. Not all. I've been on the other side of it. I know that. It's a good profession. They're going to have a good livelihood out of it. You know, all right, if you have to incur costs and inconveniences to get your child to that point, well, that's what you do. You suck it up and you do it. And that's my opinion.
Okay. Thank you for that, Regina.
Right.
You've made your point. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to bring in Lil now. Lil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Now, you went back to college yourself as a mature student.
I did. I went back in, I started in 2012, and similar process there in terms of, you know, looking at the finances and how this is all going to work for us as a family. I'm married with two young kids at the time, and basically I had been working in 2011. So when I tried to apply for the Susie grant, I didn't qualify for it. So for year one, I had to take out a loan. I started in college in 2012, then in September, but I had managed to get, I suppose, with the Susie grant and the backed education allowance weekly. That came in weekly, and a part-time job. We managed to keep things afloat. And I suppose what I'd like to say to the lady who was on earlier about the, you know, she was trying to, I could hear she was very distressed, you know, about trying to get the finances sorted. It was one of the things that was said to me when I started in college. When I went in and chatted to the people in the mature student office, you know, to sort out the finances first and make sure that's all aligned, because you don't want to be, you know, stressing there. And there are services and supports around for that, you know, and not to give up on it. I mean, I qualified, I did it, and it was the best thing ever, because like what you were talking about earlier, I had loads of experience, but wasn't getting picked for jobs. You know, I wanted to move on to a particular area and wasn't being picked for a job because, you know, I'd be down to the last two candidates and
they have a degree. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to suck it up and take it. And I guess it was just the timing. I mean, when you think about it at the time, you know, the economy wasn't great. But I just thought that if I sucked it up then, I could benefit from it later on. So,
And you're glad you did it?
I'm glad I did it, yes. No regrets at all. I had a great time.
But as you say, get your... that advice to get your finances, you know, ducks in a row before you start is probably something that Joanne's tear her hair out, because she is doing everything she can to figure that one out. And I think
But you know, I mean, I didn't think I'd get a loan from the bank because I had no earnings, you know, when I asked for it. Now, I don't know what way things are now, but I think the difference is that the fees have gone up in the college. They have gone up, and then the threshold hasn't gone up enough in the SUSE, you know, so there's two things that have happened that aren't happening, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the SUSE like isn't keeping pace with what's happening in the expense side of it.
What's happening in the expense side of it, exactly.
Lil, thank you for that. I'm going to have to take a break.
Thank you. Thanks, Katie.
And we'll come back to this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about trying to get back into education and the barriers that people are coming across, and really, you know, how much help we should be giving people who are finding themselves in this position. We've got Joanne back on the line there. Joanne, I want you to have a listen here. I've got Mary on. I think she wants to have something to say to you. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi there. How are you, Katie? Thanks for having me on. Joanne, I don't have much, but I have €150 I'm absolutely prepared to give to you for books. Because I think what you're doing is amazing. And please don't listen to the likes of Regina, because, you know, it's fantastic that she's had the fabulous life, obviously, the perfect life. And I hope to God that her children obviously feel the same way, because I think how dare anyone come on and say, you know, you should have done this or you should have done that. You know, there were eventualities and everything, and she obviously was so well covered for it, and it's fabulous that she had the foresight to know what was going to happen the whole way through her life.
Okay, just to say, Mary, Regina's not with us to respond to you there, but just I hear what you're saying. You're just trying to support Joanne.
Oh, absolutely, and I think what you're doing is amazing. I didn't get the start of the interview. The SUSE threshold, I have nieces that were able to avail of it, thankfully, and they've gone on to be doctors. I think it's a fabulous resource that's there for people who need it. Unfortunately, times, everything has increased in price. It seems like the grant, the whole process hasn't kept up with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is hard for people. And I absolutely admire anyone who wants to go back and try and give back to society. And it doesn't sound like, you know, Joanne is one of these people who's sitting back, taking it all from the state. So, you know, well
absolutely
done. And
not.
I think people in power need to you know, sit back. And it's well and good, like all these guys, you know, there's always something on their desk, an agenda for this, an agenda for that. But, you know, these are things that can help solve other situations. So they need to be readdressed. And I think, Joanne, well done to you for going back and doing everything. You know,
Thank you so much.
It will happen.
I know. I mean, everything. I just so impressive what Joanne has, you know, all the blocks she has put, that she has got over herself, and all the things she has done over the last 7 years to get to where she is at the point of being able to do the things she loves to do or she wants to do. And it's, you know, I can just, the frustration of coming up against this now at this point. You actually are going back to college yourself, Mary, are you? Am I reading this right?
I like college. I like school. I like brain food. I like books. I'm a bit of a nerd like that. So if there's something I can learn, I'm your worst nightmare in Trivial Pursuit sometimes. and a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Yeah, no, I've gone back. I started an SNA course, levels 5 and 6, to be able to hopefully go into my local school and give a dig out, because, again, they can't get SNAs. I would do it on a voluntary basis because my children are in the school. So if I can go in and help out, you know, and have that qualification, you know, behind me, I'm perfectly happy to do that. I also want to look at doing EMT and be a qualified EMT. I've always wanted to do something in the medical background, so that could just be my, have a taste of, is it something I want to do to become a paramedic? You know,
yeah,
we'll see. But SNA is my thing at the moment. I'm starting at in September. Unfortunately, I had to put it off due to other things happening in my life to start this year. But yeah, no, I'm there. I want to do it and I'm doing it. I've paid for the course. So, you know, I'm in a position where I can do that. I'm lucky enough that I can do that. But like that, it's not that I'm flahoolic with money or I have loads of money. I don't. You know, I get it and I put it towards it and that's it, you know. I'm very grateful for what I have and what I'm able to do. So, you know, that's why. And I happen just, you know, as I said, I've a few quid, it's there. I could go out and blow it and dump stores tomorrow morning or I can decide it can go to a good cause. So, you know what, that's where I am.
Well, you're very, very good, Mary. So we'll keep your details there and we'll pass them on to Joanne afterwards. But that's a very kind and generous offer. I want to bring in Kevin now. Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Sorry, can I just say, before I bring you in, Kevin, actually, I should ask Joanne if she wants to say anything back to Mary.
Thank you so much, Mary. There's absolutely no way I would take your €150, but I appreciate her kind words and her encouragement. That means a lot. And to go ahead with the SNA course, that's how I started, and I went in but on a voluntary basis as well, and because of that is how I got the job. So, and it's such a rewarding job for kind-hearted people, which she obviously is. But thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mary.
It was there, and if it's stuck, stationary, anything like that, look, it's there.
Great. Okay, look, I'm going to go to Kevin in a moment, but I'm told I'll just take another quick break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, I just want to quickly go to Kevin then. Kevin, you were listening to our callers there.
I was, Katie. How are you? I just said I'd share, which is something, not, it's not exactly on the same point in the conversation, but it's certainly to do with back to education and what I experienced. And just very quickly, I was made redundant from my previous job a few years ago, three years ago. So I thought to myself, well, what will I do? And remember, I've been working since I was 18, really, studying and working as well. So when I was made redundant, I said, I'll go back. And I wanted to do lay chaplaincy, so I said, I'll give it a go. So applied to DCU, got into the master's course there. It's a few thousand, obviously, for that course. Mm-hmm. So I'll do it full-time for the year, and I thought, hopefully I'll be able to apply for something from social welfare, from the state. So I thought I might have got the back to education allowance, went down to intro, and I was entitled to nothing. So for the whole year, I took off to upskill myself to get back into the workforce. I got nothing from the social welfare. So, and I'm still a bit sore about that.
Why is that? I mean, what was the
basically, just they didn't cover the course I wanted to do. The course they cover, as they said at the office, was the Masters in Education in UCD. But I didn't want that. Neither did I need it, Katie. I already have a HDIP in education because I was a teacher previously. So the course I wanted to do, no. So I was left high and dry, Katie, with nothing. And you know, I was disgusted, really, after I've been paying taxes since I was 18, Katie, working right up to 3 years ago, full time. Mm-hmm. When I was a student, obviously, I was my BA. And again, I got nothing for that, Katie, either. Mum and Dad got me through that, thank God. And, you know, so really, up to this point, I found myself, okay, I'll ask the state for something, and I got absolutely nothing. So it just gets to a point where you see, what's the point of doing maybe in many ways the right things as you see it? Because sometimes you get nothing for it, Katie, you know. And it's not even that you fall between the cracks, because, you know, it's just, they just wouldn't cover it. So there's me trying to upskill myself to get back into the workforce after being made redundant, and I got no help at all. Now, somebody might argue, well, you didn't need to, Kev, you had your redundancy. And rightly so, luckily I had that to cover me.
Yeah.
But that was a fair whack of money gone over 1 year to live and to study. So, yeah, that's where I was left with the state and assistance from it, you know.
And you got through it though, Kevin, did you?
Oh, I got through it, yeah.
And are you a chaplain now?
Great year. Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm full-time chaplain now. Yeah, love it. It's fantastic, Katie. Love it. It's a great, great job. Okay. 2 years done now, and it's absolutely amazing. Yeah, every day is fantastic with the kids. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, and yeah, I got through it. I did really well. Got first class and all this, that and the other. So, thrilled. But it was a tough slog because, you know, financially, I had to cover myself as well, you know. Yeah. And that's a tough year when you're in it, you know. I studied before part-time, you know, and that's tough enough. When you're working
full time is a tough year
to cover everything, you know, whatever you used to as in my working life. You still have to try and keep most of that going for a year without a salary coming in, so as well as study. But look, I got through it, thank God. But again, I'm so let down by the Department of Social Welfare, Department of Education, basically the state. Again, you know, I was let down, and I got onto my local TDs. They tried their best, but nothing could be done really, because that's just they're the laws, are they? The
I was
rules
going to
the
say the policy, yeah. The policy is the policy.
Yeah. And they don't budge. No matter, it's just blanket policies that do not take into, don't regard people's individual situations and where they've come from. And that's what gets me. They need to look at those policies to figure out how can we satisfy maybe the needs of a person like me coming to the situation. Yeah. Because one policy just doesn't fit everyone. It fits a lot, I know, but the likes of me coming along, it didn't fit me at all. So I got nothing, Katie. So yeah, still a bit sore.
Still
that.
A bit sore, definitely, Kevin. I can hear the soreness there, but I'm delighted you got what you got
it
to where you wanted
out.
To go.
It did work out, thank God.
Under your own steam, as they say. Listen, thank you for
that's
Kevin.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks,
cheers. Just before we leave this, then I want to bring in Lucy because Kevin mentioned there that, you know, these policies don't always take into account the obstacles people face. Lucy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You were struck by Linda's story in particular, I think.
Yes, I was, yeah. And it just brought back memories. I've been out of college for a while now, but I remember when I was in college and I became a single parent myself. And it's not something that you choose to do, you know. And unfortunately, when you do go into the world, you find a lot of obstacles. So when I applied for CC grant, I was refused. Although I was already single parent, I was not really depending on my own parents. But as a person under the age of 23, I wasn't able to apply as an adult. And they kept telling me, oh, just maybe come back, take a few semesters off or come back when you are 23 and you can apply as an adult. And I did apply then at 23. And I was told, well, you can't actually do that. It has to be a brand new course. And I was already 2 years into my bachelor degree. So there was obstacles after obstacles. And CC grant, I never got to.
So you when you applied first, you were under the age limit where you could apply as an individual,
yeah.
And you
yeah.
had to be dependent on your parents' income. And then when you did go back at the right age, they said, oh, now you can't do that course because you need to apply for a new course.
Yeah, and it just didn't make sense for me to drop out because I only had one year left. It didn't make sense to start a brand new course. And then, you know, that was over. It took me 2 years on top to actually finish a 3 years course. Unfortunately, because I failed a few times, as a single parent, you have these obstacles, you have jobs, the child gets sick, you get sick. You also get penalized for repeats. So that's an extra cost if you do happen to fail an exam. And it's a big cost. For example, in ECD, it was €250 per module.
Right.
And so that's constantly, you know, the financial burden just keeps coming back at you. So it's not something that you choose to do. It's not just easy to say, oh, you chose this life, you chose to be a single parent and you signed up for this. It's not, you know, you don't sign up for this at all. And then when my child went to school, I applied for the uniform allowance for the first time ever. That's the only time I applied. And I was refused based on the fact that I was 24 years over the threshold.
Wow.
And that was shocking to me because the uniform cost about 300 at least, you know, even if it's just a cheap one. So, you know, like 24 years on top the threshold. And what brought back to me is like the thresholds just don't work. If you don't fit the description, if you don't tick the boxes, you'll fall under the radar, you know. and you're just not seen. You don't get the support that most of the people do. And then you might be stuck in poverty because of that.
I think, Lucy, really, that you make such a good point in terms of that extra challenge that you have as a single parent trying to put yourself through college, which is the thing you're told you should be trying to do, and the system kind of exactly. pushes you towards doing that. But then when you try and push through that door, you have, you know, you have all the, because you have all the extra childcare issues, you have this, you know, struggles with, you know, one income and trying to keep a roof over everyone's head. It's you know, I have huge admiration for all single parents who actually manage to navigate the system and get themselves and eventually their children through education, because it is no mean feat, that is for sure. So congratulations, Lucy, is what I'm saying to you.
Thank you.
You did it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for that, Lucy. Are we going to go to Danny now? Yeah. No, we're going to take a break. Yeah, we'll take a break and we'll be back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, we're going to leave that there for now, because I want to go to Ciara. Ciara, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is something that just comes up in conversation, actually, from time to time. And I wonder how people cope with this. But let's take it back. You have a restaurant in Meath.
Yeah, I have a restaurant in County Meath, Sage and Stone, it's called, in Duleek. And just, it's based on a family farm, and we are a busy daytime restaurant. And okay. We get lots of families, older people, you know, like all ages, to be honest. But recently I've had a couple of issues. But one in particular was a nut allergy, a customer with a nut allergy. So the family came in and the mom told me that the daughter had a severe nut allergy, and that could we confirm that, you know, she would have no problems with any of the, that we would have nuts written, like say on the allergens on the menu, if we had nuts, you know, if nuts are in this or doesn't contain nuts, that we could confirm and guarantee that there would be no nuts in the area. And I couldn't. And I couldn't, like, because our restaurant and our kitchen, we prepare all our foods, we make all our cakes, and there would be, like, probably traces of nuts in the kitchen and all that kind of thing. And so, basically, at the end of the day, because of the severity of her nut allergy, she wasn't happy to order anything. And we couldn't give her anything, you know, with a confirmation that we would be absolutely guaranteed that she wouldn't have a reaction. Mm-hmm. So I just wondered, what do, like, other than having a bubble where you prepare that one child's food in an area, what do restaurants do? Because I can totally see where the parent rang me after and said that in this day and age, you know, there should be, you know, there should be restaurants that are able to cater for this, and there should be a separate area that we should be able to prepare food for. And I can totally understand her, and I can totally understand where that mom is, just wants a normal life for her daughter. But as a restaurant, I couldn't confirm or guarantee that her daughter was going to be free from nuts.
Of course, yeah. And I'm sure most people understand this now, because it has, especially if you've got kids in school or if you've taken a flight or whatever, it's explained to people a lot now that if you have a severe, and a lot of children seem to have this now, that I don't recall it as in my own childhood, but you do come across a lot of children now who are carrying EpiPens because any exposure whatsoever to even, you know, nuts on somebody's breath or in the air could actually set off a very, very dangerous, severe attack.
Like, for instance, I took out a roulade out of the oven yesterday, and traces of whatever had been baked before it, like there was a coffee and walnut cake done, and then traces of the walnuts actually flew onto the roulade. Do you get me?
Yes, exactly. That's it. So the tiniest trace could actually set off somebody with a severe allergy. And it could be, as you say, very, very dangerous. So obviously, the only way to guarantee it is to have another kitchen, basically, where your food is prepared totally separately.
Exactly. And then to do a separate kitchen for it, then there's gluten-free, then there's shellfish allergies, then there's this, that, there's a litany of allergies that, you know, you couldn't have a separate kitchen for each of them. So I was just wondering, you know, and I can totally understand where the mom is coming from. Like she said, in this day and age, in 2023, surely my daughter can live with this allergy and that she can have a normal life. And I'm like, well, I actually don't know what to do here. And I can totally see where she's coming from. And that's why I wrote into you, because I just want to know what are other restaurants. I looked up some of the restaurants online, and McDonald's say, no, we can't guarantee. You know, some of the other restaurants said, no, we can't guarantee. But, you know, I was listening to what she had said, like in this day and age, surely we can. Now, I have no problem with that woman bringing in her own food. But, I mean, that's no fun for a child.
It might be the, I wonder, is it the only way, though? I mean, the, what is your legal liability here, Kira? By law, you have to list a certain number of allergens, right?
Yeah, but you have to have the allergens on the menu. But after that, if it's a severe allergy, I mean, we cannot confirm, like by law, we cannot guarantee that, you know, your child is going to be free from, because even on this occasion, she said, look, we'll just have a ham sandwich. Mm-hmm. So I said, OK, that's fine. So then the chef went to look at the packaging from our white bread, and the white bread manufacturer said may contain nuts because it's produced in a factory that has nuts. So from our point of view, then we had to cover ourselves, and we had to tell her, well, actually, our bread, you know, says that it may have traces. So if your daughter has a nut allergy, well, then we can't guarantee. So, you know, it was definitely put back on us that she wanted to have an experience in a restaurant, but what could we do? And I really was flummoxed, and I had no idea.
God, your heart would go out to the families, though, wouldn't it? I mean, it's
oh, no, totally.
It must be such a nerve-wracking thing to have that hanging there always.
Exactly. Imagine having to carry an EpiPen in every, if you got an ice cream in someone's an ice cream shop, or if you got, just in case. And like, it must be desperate, but I don't know as a restaurant how, unless I put on like for every one person that comes in, I can't afford to put on a separate kitchen for that type of thing. So going forward, I actually don't know. And I was just wondering if any other restaurants had any experience or how they dealt with it, because I actually am at a loss. I don't know how to come back to that lady even.
Okay, well, stay where you are, Kira, because I might have somebody on another line who might be able to fill us in more on this. Kieran, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Am I reading? You have a nut allergy yourself, do you?
No, my son Tommy has.
Your son has. Okay. And you're a chef?
Yes, well, not chefing anymore, but I was a chef for about 30 years.
Okay. So how did you discover your son's sensitivity here?
It was kind of by chance, really. We were out eating in an oriental restaurant where I live, and we'd always known from an early age he hated the smell of peanuts for some reason, but we never paid any attention to it. But anyway, between the jigs and the reels, we were at a buffet style meal and he had chicken satay. Now, it was fine for a while until we got home and he got severely sick. And it was, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a child as sick as he was that evening. So we went through all the rigmarole, you know, getting the doctor onto it, getting a consultant, making sure he got tested. And eventually the test came back to say that he had a nut allergy. Now, there's peanuts and there's nuts, the ground nuts and the tree nuts. So unfortunately with the nut allergy, you can't, it's very hard to specify which one you're allergic to. So what we did when he was very young was just stay generally away from anything that had traces of nuts or nuts in it. Even when we ate out, you'd ask. And in fairness, from a chef's point of view, I'd understand where they are coming from inside in the kitchen. It is extremely, it's actually 100% difficult. You can't guarantee anybody that there's going to be no trace of nuts on anything. Because with kitchens, depending on what you're doing, you could be doing a multitude of items from starters to mains to desserts that all contain nuts. Or you might have nuts in the kitchen up on the shelf, but you just can't guarantee it's nut-free. So I think through education with ourselves, myself and my wife Fiona, and we just kind of walked through it. We figured it out. And as he's got older, he's 18 now, it's got a lot easier because he can manage it himself. and he carries an EpiPen all the time. Now, he has a severe nut allergy, so it's life-threatening, and we've been told as they get older, the allergies can get more severe, and if you have one reaction to a nut allergy, it mightn't be the only one you have after eating a nut. It could come back a few hours later, so hence they have to keep you in overnight for observation, even after getting the EpiPen. So it's a severe one, and yeah, we're just managing it. And as a chef, I understand completely where that lady's coming from. It is so hard, and I don't think the onus should be on the restaurateur, really, to be honest with you, because within the industry, they're producing products every day, and on the package, it will say, may contain traces of nuts. I think you have to go back to where it all starts, really, on the mass production of the food, you know, because it's everywhere, you know. Biscuits, snacks.
But can I ask you, your son, Kieran, would you have been able to go out to like family restaurants like Kieran's?
Oh, God, yeah. We would have never, ever stopped. The only ones we didn't go near probably too often were Oriental and Indian. Just because Indian, I think, I can be corrected on this, I think they're very, they like using peanut oil a lot, so we just don't go near them at all. The Chinese, and you just have to manage it. But the thing is, with and it's not their fault or any restaurant's fault, there'd be a lot of mixed utensils, especially when you're cooking. A cook could pick up a utensil that might have been dipped in peanut, and you wash it, and you think it's clean, but just cross-contamination. It's very hard to manage it. So there's that to it as well.
And has your son had any other episodes since that first very scary one, obviously?
He's had two, both which weren't restaurant associated, they were home based, and it was just through ourselves misreading information on packets and himself just picking up something. He's into sports and he's always looking at protein bars and that kind of thing. So usually we were very, very good at it, at reading it, and he'd have a bite and all of a sudden within 10, 20 seconds he's saying there's something wrong here. So we've had to administer the EpiPen once. And then it was a period of time for observation in the hospital after that. So,
and as a family,
thankfully, he's all good.
As a family, has this made you, you know, hyper vigilant? Because I just feel like I know, because you're reminded of it, obviously, you know, in schools and stuff. Because we have we get notes out from school about it, and as well as that on as I said before, on aeroplanes and that. And I always feel for the people who are, you know, who have the child in that situation, because I think I would be so nervous that you would accidentally, something would accidentally happen and would be there'd be an accidental exposure to this and you wouldn't be there to sort to help.
I think the worst of it for us is when you're travelling and when he was younger, because it can be airborne, and if the airlines don't go with you, it's, ooh, we've been at a couple of situations. But in fairness to all the airlines we travel with, they eventually kind of made the announcement that there would be no nuts served on the flight, which it makes my wife feel easier, it makes us feel easier. Tommy's not too bad then, so you just know that it's not being affected. And but you do get vigilant. My wife knows extremely very good at it, and making sure that even when he's at 18, you know, he's been away a few times, maybe on his own recently, and just to make sure he carries the EpiPen. And you would have practiced that with them when they were younger on an orange, just to know, because it takes a bit of a jab to get it in there. And so, but in fairness too, to the, there's board here in Ireland got to do with nut allergies, and they're very good to deal with, and they gave us a lot of information when he was very young, and you just follow up on it and you keep vigilant. That's the best you can do, really.
Katie, can I just
there's only less than a minute left here, but very quickly.
Just on, I can totally understand where Kieran is coming from, and I pity anyone who would have a child like this. But from my point of view, and from a legal and a litigation point of view, like, I think I'm facing a brick wall here, and I don't know what, you know, I would love to help. And I'd love to do, you know, but apart from putting the allergens, I think I'll have to just give the responsibility onto the parent going forward.
Yeah.
To decide what they want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if they decide, but I cannot guarantee for them. Do you know what I mean?
I think you're in violent agreement there. I think, Kieran, you'd agree with Kira there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, from a HACCP point of view, every restaurant has to list their allergens, right? Whether it's nut-based, dairy-based, sulfite-based, anything like that. That's, you legally have to list those. Once you've those listed on your menu and you say that you're carrying nuts or there might be traces of nuts, you're covered. And unfortunately, after that, there's nothing else a chef or an owner can do.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to have to leave it at that. Kira, if we get anything more in on this, we'll come back to it. But thank you for that, Kira, and the very best of luck to you and your son. And Kira, thanks for that. That's all we have time for on Sound today. We had Mark McGrath, our producer is Siobhan Hogan, our BCO is Adriana Verona. Hang on now for Ray.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.